Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It is late night right here on Sports Radio WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you as we'll make our way together until only midnight tonight. And no, it is not Friday night. Friday night is usually the night where I get to go home, get to bed at the glorious hour of 1 a.m., but I get to do that two nights in a row. I'm telling you, by Saturday, I am going to feel like a king. All right? We're talking about back-to-back nights with 4.5 to 5 hours of quality sleep each, and I cannot wait. I am so excited to sleep. You have no idea. Last night I left here, it was a little after 2. I stay for a few minutes and thank the producers for doing a good job. Joe always does a great job here. So I hang out for a minute, say bye to him. I go to the car, sort of check Twitter one more time, check my email, and then I get going. Last night was a weird night because it was snowing out. We probably had 2 or 3 inches on the ground when I left here. But for whatever reason, the plows really weren't out yet on the highway. So what should have been a relatively easy drive home with powdery snow and not all that much of it became a treacherous drive home. So I pulled into my driveway around 4:30. It took me 2.5 hours to get home. I was up at 6:30 for the day, and here I am talking to you fine people, and I've got sort of an idea tonight. I want to do things a little bit different. Last night we had an awesome, awesome discussion. I cannot thank everybody enough. The input you guys brought to the table and absolutely the love and energy and flair that you guys brought to the conversation, all centered around what Reamer wrote on WEI.com and really centered around Massachusetts and really what I think is the stupidity of Massachusetts to try and reach into within your four walls and dictate how you raise your kids. Like, that's not their job. They can barely keep their state afloat. So why really is it their job to go into your house and tell you how to raise your children? And again, for, you know, old time's sake, just to sort of reiterate what we said last night, whether you're for tackle football at a young age or not is irrelevant to the conversation. It really is. Because the beauty of living in this country, the beauty of being somebody that, you know, we'd like to think is semi-intelligent, you know, you're an American, you've got a certain number of freedoms. Well, the beauty of that is what? You can make a decision for yourself. So if you're a parent and your kid wants to play tackle football, you guys don't have to, you're not beholden to the child. You know, unless you do everything that your kid wants you to do, which would be a horrible way to parent. I mean, if you said yes, if I said yes to everything my kids asked for, would raise little a-holes, and you can't do that. So there's a discussion worth happening, and even the discussion itself can be a great life lesson for the kid to be a part of. You know, watching a mother and father with their kid sort of debate the pros and cons, doing a pros and cons list, an actual list, and involving your child with it. These are things that you can do. And you know, as a family group, a family unit, you can come up with a plan and decide what's best for you guys. And the best part about it, and I don't think I stressed this enough last night, and we're not going to do 2 hours on football again tonight. I'm not, because I've got a plan for tonight. I've got an idea for tonight, and it's going to require more help from you guys. So we'll get there in a minute. But the beauty of the decision-making process that we all get to be a part of when it comes to making decisions with and for our children. And notice I said with first, because I'm a believer that the child, especially somebody who's 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, they should be part of that decision-making process. They should witness and watch and participate and be a part of a couple, be it two men, two women, a man and a woman, I don't care about that, but watch their family unit sit down and make a family decision together. And you know what? Hopefully there's some debate. And hopefully there's some intense debate as part of that discussion. And watch these people that they love and love each other hammer out a decision. And guess what? The best part of it is, the one thing that makes it all okay, is that if you make a decision as a family unit and your kid goes and gets his bell rung in his first game, or even worse, maybe, you know, one of his friends gets their bell rung and it scares you or it scares the kid, and ultimately you guys decide that tackle football is not for you, not for your family, you've got the right to pull him out. You've got the right to pull her out. Nobody is forcing you to play tackle football, just like nobody's forcing you to keep your kid away from tackle football. And to me, it's one of the more basic sort of rights we have here in America, and that is the right to choose what's best for you, what's best for your family, and what is best for your children. And ultimately here, if enough studies continue to come out and enough data continues to come out, whether it's correct data or not, because, again, I cited some of this stuff last night, and it's going to take a more thorough investigation on my part. I'm working on that. I'm hoping by this time next week I've got something special for you guys. But one of the things that I really ran into, I made some investigative phone calls today, and one of the things that I continued to run into was this idea and this fact. So it was an idea at first, but then it became proven to me that it's fact, that a lot of these studies that are cited, so you can read what looks to be a very official sort of article, column, newsletter, whatever it may be, press release, you can read it. It can be tweeted out. You can find it online. It can be in print. You can go to a conference and get a leaflet. They all look so official, and they all have big fancy words, and they're all highlighted by, and they're all sort of endorsed by somebody with the name doctor, somebody with the word doctor in their name, right? Well, guess what? Doctors are paid off, and these studies are paid for. So again, even when it comes to the impact of youth football on long-term depression, the impact of youth football on long-term CTE, a lot of the studies that we're getting sent to us right now, a lot of the studies that are being cited as the evidence that's needed to potentially pass an intrusive law like this in Massachusetts, a lot of those things are bought and paid for by certain groups with certain interests. And it's a shame. And by the way, football's not alone there. Soccer, same thing. Hockey, same thing. Basketball, same thing. So even when it comes to the health and well-being of our children, where we would like to think that, you know, this lawmaker and all these studies that we're reading about are coming from a good place within somebody's heart, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, that may not even be the case. Like everything else in life, it looks like this is another financially driven thing, and it's objectifying our children and making our children the driving force behind something when really they're just the excuse behind making more money. And to me, that's disgusting, but it is pretty damn typical. So if you have leftover thoughts from last night's discussion, by all means, when we left here last night at 2 o'clock in the morning, the lines were still jammed up with people wanting to get in and get their opinions out there on whether or not Massachusetts and other states, for that matter, because Massachusetts is not the only state considering this type of legislation. So whether or not that's a good idea, whether or not it's something that we would welcome as part of our family unit, whether or not it is something that you would welcome in your home, whether or not you need the state government to make that sort of decision for you and for your children because they feel that you're not capable. They feel that you're not a quality father. They feel you're not a quality mother. They feel you're not capable of doing what's in the best interest of your family and your children. So these little Massachusetts lawmakers, they want to step in and make that choice for you. To me, that's it's a wild insult to everybody's intelligence. And once again, it's government stepping in where they don't belong. But hey, shouldn't we be used to that by now? Because that's what governments become. Government has lost sight of what their role really is or was supposed to be in society. And now it's become micromanaging everything down to what sports your kids are allowed to play at a very young age. It's got to stop at some point, doesn't it? Because if we allow something like this to happen, you know, it's a slippery slope, and before you know it, there's going to be certain limitations on hockey. There'll be helmets out there for soccer, and eventually helmets won't be enough for soccer. I mean, eventually they're going to figure out that the only thing that's safe for our kids is to be homebound all day long because everything else that they do comes with inherent risks. I'm taking my kids skiing for the first time this weekend. I've skied once in my life. Truth be told, I'm a little scared. I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to get hurt. I enjoy my life. I enjoy my lifestyle. I don't feel like breaking a leg.
Just make sure you wear a helmet.
Are you serious? Is that something I should do?
I mean, yeah, I've skied my entire life. Now, granted, I don't wear a helmet because I'm just young and dumb, but I mean, I'd wear one.
So do I, like, bring my bike helmet, or is there a skiing helmet? Like, what
no,
do I?
There's like, special skiing helmets with the goggles and everything that you can use.
So the owner of my company has always had a condo at Loon, and it was a beautiful condo, but it wasn't good enough for him. So, you know, he now he wants to be king of everything. So he bought two units at the top of the mountain, and he combined them into one. So he ripped them down and had this massive unit built. And he just opened it up last month. It's finally ready. It's finally done. And it's only he and his wife. And he's like 70 and she's in her late 50s. But they built it out so it can be a gathering spot for his friends and family and a few of his lucky employees. And he's invited us up every weekend, but we've had something to do. So this weekend, we're finally going to go up on Saturday. And, you know, he's going to take care of everything and rent the skis for me and my wife and my kids and, you know, make sure that we all get lessons. And it's going to be fun. You know, my kids are very excited. I'm excited, but I'm also a little bit nervous. My kids aren't nervous at all. But maybe Massachusetts should step in and tell us that it's not safe because they could break a leg. They could hit their heads. We could hit our heads. There could be a head injury that happens this weekend at Loon Mountain. We don't have any experience. Nobody's really taught us what to do. Oh, my. Like, these things happen, you know? And as much as I want to protect my children, and that's the thing. You have, as a parent, and if you guys are parents, you understand this. It's instinctual. Like, you want to protect your kids. When your kids hurt, whether they hurt physically, whether they hurt mentally, whether their heart hurts, it doesn't make a difference. When your kid is in pain, and no matter the reason for that pain, you hurt too as a parent. There is nothing worse than watching your kid hurt, and it doesn't make a difference where that pain is born from. So nobody wants to be a part of, you know, their kid's pain. Nobody wants to witness that, and certainly nobody wants to be a cause of that. As a parent, if you've done something to cause your children pain, and I'm not talking about punishing them. They're going to cry then, but that's par for the course. I'm talking about injuring them. I'm talking about losing your temper potentially and maybe backhanding them when you shouldn't. Not that I've done that, but it happens. You know, that if you cause your kid pain, you're going to hurt 10 times worse than the kid does. You know, we're genetically wired to our children. And, you know, we hurt when they hurt. So the last thing that we want to do as parents is expose our kids to something that could potentially hurt them. And, yeah, could skiing hurt my kid? Absolutely. You know, could playing football hurt my kid? Absolutely. But my son, you know, he's been in karate for a couple of years. He's played flag football. He's played hockey. He's played basketball for a few years, and he's continuing to play a little bit of everything until he finds what sticks. And that's okay. And tackle football is going to be a part of that. And I'm glad that I live in New Hampshire because at least in New Hampshire, at least right now, I don't have to worry about the state jumping in and telling me, no, 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 Mr. Gilroy, you're not capable. You and your wife are not capable of making the best decision for your son. We're going to choose to make that decision for you. So it is Sports Radio WEEI. My name is Patrick Gilroy. This is Late Night. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. So opening the show tonight with any leftover thoughts, conversation from last night's discussion, it really sort of took over last night. We went a four-hour show. I'm going to say three-plus hours was people really being very passionate about this very discussion. But the other part of the program tonight, and we'll do both at the same time. Other part of the program tonight is very much going to be about some of the Celtics issues. But instead of me doing what we've all done and what I've listened to, everybody from Dickerson and James to Volani to Ordway, Rich Keefe, everybody's been doing the same thing, and I'm done with it. I've done it too. I'm guilty of it too. You know, we can sit here and I can tell you what I think is wrong with the Celtics. And whether you agree with me or not, it's certainly up for debate. There's a certain segment of fans out there, and I sort of vacillate between this, that believe that Kyrie Irving is the problem. A certain group of fans believe that he is not the problem whatsoever. And, of course, I believe the truth is somewhere in the middle. But I do think that forgetting about trying to figure out who's the problem on this team, who is causing the drama on this team, who is the one behind the infighting on this team, why doesn't this team seem to like each other or enjoy each other's company, all those things, forgetting about that portion of it. And let's focus in on the basketball. Let's focus in on what we've seen because we've now watched this game, or this team play for 60 games, right? So I think that basketball fans that have watched this team can identify some fundamental issues that have really plagued this team for the better part of this season. So I'm going to identify a couple, and I'm going to ask you guys tonight to chime in here. And let's see, maybe Brad Stevens is listening. Maybe an assistant coach, Jay Larinaga, is listening. Maybe somebody's listening out there that's within the Celtics family that could pass along some of these tips, because I continue to watch this team and watch them make the same mistakes game in and game out. I continue to watch this team, you know, continue to have the same fatal flaws game in and game out. And last night, if this doesn't really highlight what I'm talking about, then nothing will. And I'm not saying that Kyrie was the problem, but I am going to say this. The Celtics are 6-0 in their last six games without Kyrie Irving, and they're 0-6 in their last six games with Kyrie Irving. Now take those numbers and bring them into last night's game. Celtics were down 12 with about 8 minutes to go in the third. Kyrie goes to the bench. Guess what? Celtics make a run. They get within two. Then Kyrie comes to go back in the game. There's 7 minutes to go in the game. Kyrie is back in. Celtics are down four at this point. As Kyrie comes back in, guess what happens? The Blazers, they open it back up to 12. Brad calls a timeout with a tick under 3 minutes remaining. Now, in that timeout, he did not remove Kyrie from the floor. No. What he did was something that he's done maybe a half a dozen times this year, and he should be doing more of it. He moved Kyrie off the ball. He moved Kyrie Irving off the ball. He allowed Marcus Smart to play the de facto point guard. And guess what happened? Kyrie, he scored a couple of quick points as the shooting guard. He hit a critical three. The Celtics nearly pulled off an incredible comeback with not enough time remaining. If Marcus Smart didn't take an ill-fated three when the Celtics were down five with about 55 seconds to go, they had the momentum going their way. They had a real opportunity to try and steal that win last night. And I've noticed this, that each and every time Kyrie plays off the ball, it frees him up to do what he does best, and that's score. And guess what else happens? The Celtics, they start pinging the ball around again. They start looking like a variation of last year's team, except now they have Kyrie Irving on the floor. So remember what last year's team did in the playoffs. They were able to play with that pace and space that Brad dictates so much, that Brad loves so much, and they did that because they were so eager to help each other find the best available shot. So whether it was Terry Rozier or Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum or Al Horford, everybody was one unit on the same page trying to do everything in their power to get the Boston Celtics the best available shot. And they were doing this with, you know, very little time coming off the shot clock. They were literally trying to play a very high-paced version of basketball, transition basketball. That's not what's happening with this edition of the Celtics. Watch Kyrie Irving. Kyrie needs the ball in his hands. He needs to dominate the ball. And what's happening now is Kyrie Irving, because this Celtics team is playing with no continuity, he's oftentimes, of the 24-second shot clock, he's oftentimes using 14 to 18 seconds of it, really just dribbling around, not doing much of anything. Meanwhile, the Celtics offense is just standing around waiting for Kyrie Irving to do something. And this is why their offense looks broken so many of the times when Kyrie is on the floor. Because he is not getting this team into their offensive sets, and they're no longer running the ball through Al Horford in the high post. When Kyrie Irving is on the floor, the Celtics don't run their offense the way they have over the last few years. No longer are they allowing Al Horford to play to his strength and be the best passing big man in the NBA. Nope, that goes away completely. They'll use Al a little bit in a pick-and-roll situation, but that's about it. So they're not dumping it into Al in the high post and allowing Al to be the brilliant playmaker that he is. The other thing here is when you look at Gordon Hayward, let's go back and look at the handful of games where he has been himself, where he has looked like Gordon Hayward. Guess what he's done then? He has been the guy that has been the playmaker. The Celtics have run the offense through him. He has played kind of like a point forward, brought the ball up the floor, but he's dominated the ball, and when he does that, he gets the Celtics into their sets very, very quickly, and now he's got the ball in his hands. So with the ball in his hands, he's not relying on his teammates to help him get his offense. So in those games, when the ball is in his hands and it's up to him to set up the offense, he can call his own number, and he does, and he has, and it has been successful. And when you go back and you look at what made him so successful with the Utah Jazz, the Jazz used him as essentially a point guard. When they played in the half court, it was Gordon Hayward calling the plays. It was Gordon Hayward setting up the offense. I think Brad Stevens needs to get back to what made Gordon Hayward so special. The fact that he's a five-tool player. The fact that one of his best strengths is his ability to run an offense at his size and at his strength. And I think Kyrie Irving, whether he wants to accept the role happily or not, Kyrie Irving needs to play off the ball a good portion of these games, Maybe he starts at point guard, but as the game moves on, he needs to transition over to the shooting guard. So these are my ideas to get this Celtics team going. The fact is this, there's about 22 games remaining. They still have the most talented team in the Eastern Conference. There are no more excuses. All we have is a group of guys that are not working very well as a collection, as a collective group of Boston Celtics. So a group of talented basketball players that seem like a mismatched group of players. But is there a way, coaching-wise, where Brad Stevens can once again establish his brilliance by slightly tweaking the roles that these guys play and therefore bringing out the best in his basketball team? Celtics fans, I'm calling on you. It's time to be coach of the Boston Celtics tonight. Fix this roster. Fix this team with the players currently on the roster. It's your opportunity to show me that you guys know your hoops as well. It is Patrick Gilroy. It is WEI Late Night. The number to join me here tonight is 617-779-7937. It is Sports Radio WEI. It's Late Night here. It's Patrick Gilroy with you as we'll make our way together up until midnight tonight. The number to join us here is 617-779-7937. 93.7, you text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And look, you know, last night, a very interesting program. One of those shows where it wasn't so much about the sports, or at least the four major sports that we talk about so much here and so much on the other station that seems to consume our lives. It was really a show about the fundamentals of our lives at home, right? And where we believe the line should be when it comes to government intrusion. And I left here with an incredibly great feeling because whether we agreed or disagreed, I feel like there was an awesome three-hour discussion had, which is so hard to do in today's day and age. You know, this day and age where we are mired in this political quagmire that we all live in, where you either are a diehard Republican, and if you get your news, you get it from Fox News or Breitbart, or you're a diehard Democrat, which means that you watch CNN or MSNBC. Even the morning show here is so guilty of this, you know, where, let's face it, the couple of times I was in with Callahan, he is a staple of this show. He's been here for 20 years, and he is a loony Republican, all right? Not saying that all Republicans are loony, but he goes to the extreme. So he's not willing, he's unable, and he's not capable of having an intelligent discussion where both sides get to make coherent points. He's not interested in that. He's only interested in moving his propaganda along, right? And getting his side out without listening to the other side. And that's not why the two-party system was created to begin with. Once upon a time, it was created to get the best of both sides to make this country better. And I feel like that's what we did last night. For the first time in a long time, I got to participate in a discussion, more or less moderate a discussion between all of us, where whether you agreed or disagreed with what Reamer wrote on WEI.com, whether you agreed or disagreed with the legislation that Massachusetts is trying to move forward with that limits the sort of football that our kids can play up until seventh grade, essentially making Pop Warner tackle football non-existent any longer, whether you agreed or disagreed with any part of the conversation, nobody yelled, nobody screamed. We had an intelligent, insightful debate, and I feel like I left the studio last night with more knowledge than I came into the studio with, and that made me feel really good. So if we have leftover thoughts about last night, by all means, we can continue that discussion. I don't think 3 hours is enough time to fully encapsulate everything that goes into a discussion like that. And one of the things that I just want to get across, and I see the calls, and I'll get to you guys in a second. One of the things that I just have a real hard time with is the fact that as a parent, I take pride in the way that we raise our children. I really do. And whether my children grow up to be these great adults that I hope that they'll be, or they grow up to be screw-ups, we're gonna love them to death and do the best job that we possibly can. You know, I said this last night. Whether it's right or wrong, when we moved to New Hampshire, we chose Wyndham. My wife chose Wyndham because she essentially looked at the public school systems, and Wyndham was ranked number one. So that's where we went. And the coincidence here, or really the irony here, is that here we are 5 years later, and my kids aren't going to the public school systems. We're paying it through our taxes, but they go to private Catholic school. So, you know, we chose Wyndham for one thing, but circumstances led us down another road. And I feel like it's the same thing with football. You know, next year is going to be the first year where my 8-year-old son plays tackle football. We've had the discussion, we've had the debate in the house, and we feel like it's worth the risk for a year or two, and we'll see how it goes. And if he gets his bell rung, or if he doesn't like it, or if it becomes something that's too physical, too dangerous, we can reassess and change our minds. But that's the beauty of free will, and that is the beauty of being a parent. And I don't need a stranger. I don't need somebody from the state level to come in and sort of tell me what I can and cannot do and what my son, or what's best for my son, what's best for my daughter. And I feel like that's what's been happening quite a bit over the last 10 or 15 years in our schools. And now they're coming for our sports. And I wonder what they're going to come for next. So to me, it's all about the slippery slope that we begin to go down the moment that we allow the state of Massachusetts to dictate, you know, whether tackle football at a young age is something that these kids should be allowed to do legally or not. So it is Sports Radio, WEI, room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. Let's get out to these calls. Let's go to Charlie. Charlie's in D.C. Charlie, you're first up here on WEI.
Hey, Patch. Good to be back. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Good to be back.
Thank you.
And something that we've talked a few times, but something – I wish I was in that discussion last night, but something that you don't know about me said, I actually worked in the State House during this past summer.
Okay.
State Science side as an intern. So I can give you a little bit more knowledge onto that front and what I think about this bill.
Yeah, please do.
So one of the sponsors of the bill, actually, Brad Jones, he's a state rep from my hometown of Reading. He's not in my district because the town is, like, split, but I actually know him pretty well. And he's not what many think. He, you know, as a typical liberal snowflake, he's actually a very conservative, masculine-type guy. And he's a good guy. You know, I don't agree with him a lot.
Yep.
He's a good guy, and, you know, it's hard to be conservative in this state, and I sympathize with them. But you mentioned other sports, and, you know, I'm a soccer guy, and the soccer in the U.S. recently banned heading for all kids under the age of 12 and 12 and under. Hockey also prohibits body checking for 12 and under, you know, 12 and under age group. But those rules came down from the sports associations themselves, the United States Soccer Federation and USA Hockey, not from the government. And as a liberal and a classical libertarian, I just happen to believe that you should have the freedom in your bedroom, in your medicine chest, your greenhouse.
Sure.
To an extent with your kids. And I get the purpose of this bill and the idea behind it because, frankly, it's common sense to not have your kids play football. It's kind of like telling your kids not to play in traffic, if you ask me. And I love football, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Professional football, hardcore football fan. But I think this bill is a little bit – it's not. I don't think it really has many intentions to become law. I think it's more of a statement, symbolically, to get people in Massachusetts aware of the issues that tackle football is causing and perhaps put some pressure on Pop Warner to enact some changes or get the conversation going. Not that I support that approach to lawmaking, and I cannot say conclusively that's what the intentions behind it is, but that's really where I think this is going. This, if you ask me, really doesn't have much chance of becoming a law, at least right now. It's one of those that just came out of bills that came out of nowhere.
Yep.
It's just sort of, you know, kind of came out of nowhere, and I don't really see it becoming a law.
So Charlie, listen, your phone is screwing up here, so I'm gonna drop you, but I appreciate the phone call, and don't be a stranger to the program. I welcome your call all the time. But yeah, I gotta say this. So whether it's one of these laws that or one of these proposals that maybe never had the legs to become law or not, we'll find that out soon enough. But there's other ways to do this. If you want to educate the public, if you want to sort of make sure that Pop Warner is doing the right things here, there's ways to do it. You know, you can buy PSA time. You can buy PSA time on the radio. You can buy it on TV. You can dedicate some dollars to make sure that these volunteer coaches at a Pop Warner level are going to the proper trainings. You can make sure that you can have oversight. You can have enforcement. You can have people that show up to practices from Pop Warner to make sure that coaches are teaching the right techniques and practices. These are things that can happen. You know, there can be an oversight committee on a regional, local level to make sure that all these coaches are teaching the right tactical skills that are part of the modern day Pop Warner system, because it's very different than it was in the 70s and 80s and even 90s. You know, the way that these coaches are taught to teach these kids how to tackle is very different. There is no leading with your heads. You know, even in my age, growing up, we were taught to sort of lead with our heads and with our necks. And, you know, that exposed our necks and exposed our heads. And let's face it, the other big part of tackling at that age is there were some kids that learned how to absorb the blow, and other kids had no idea how to absorb a blow. And it was those kids that were really at risk of getting hurt, having their bell rung, because every single time they got hit, it was like they got hit by a moving freight train. You know, there's a way to do it and a way not to do things physically. So rather than eliminate something Why not pour money and resources into education? Why not pour money and resources into some limited oversight? Why not pour money and resources into getting the best out of our coaches and the best out of our children and really teaching them the proper tools and techniques that they are going to carry with them to the point where they, when they can play tackle football come junior high school and then high school JV, high school varsity, and maybe even collegiate level? You know, what you don't want is, for the first time, you know, that big, there's always two or three in a class. So the Massachusetts law says that you can't play tackle football until seventh grade. So let's say that in junior high, you know, you get that big 12-year-old that you look at him and you say, holy crap, he looks like he could be 15. You know, there's always one or two with a little mustache going on, the facial hair. You know, they just don't look their age. They look bigger. They look stronger. You're going to tell me that we never taught that kid who's now playing tackle football for the first time, he was never taught the fundamentals on how to properly tackle, how to properly absorb a blow, how to properly deliver a blow, because we eliminated that. We thought that flag football could permanently replace tackle football. And by the way, my son has played flag football for years. He got a major injury from it, but he's okay. And I don't pull him out of it because of his injury. Matter of fact, you know, the injury was a good life lesson for him. But flag football is not the same sport. It's a fundamentally different sport. It literally has a different set of rules, especially at that young age. Now, it's fun. It teaches valuable life lessons. It teaches kids all about camaraderie, being a part of a unit, being a part of a team. All of those things that Callahan likes to give football credit for, you can get that from flag football. You can get that from basketball. You can get that from soccer. Hell, you can get it from kickball. You can get it from being a part of a musical team, a glee club. As long as you're part of a larger group of people with a common goal, then you can get all those things that Callahan thinks that you can only get from tackle football. But again, you know, the one place where he and I agree is that I don't want these people, the government officials reaching into my house trying to tell me that they know how to parent me, my children, better than I do. But why would we bother with all the time and attention that goes into a bill like this when we can refocus our energy, refocus our resources, and make sure that the rules that are being taught, because again, we talked to a bunch of coaches last night. We talked to a bunch of volunteers last night that tell me that in Massachusetts anyways, it's mandatory for these coaches to go through a certain set of training and teach these kids how to actually tackle correctly, where you're not leading with your body, you're not leading with your neck, you're not exposing yourself to undue harm because you don't know how to properly absorb a blow. Because there are all these new tools and techniques that these Pop Warner coaches have to go learn and then teach to their kids, you know, there's always one or two rogue coaches that will want to win at any expense, even at that low level. And that's kind of pathetic. And they sort of teach these kids their way. You know, their way is the right way, when really their way is the archaic way that does lead to injuries. Those guys are the ones that are causing the fundamental problem here. And those are the ones that will eventually be phased out. And whether they're phased out because the education that I'm proposing has reached trickle down to a level where the parents now understand, when they're there watching their kids practice, watching their kids game, the parents actually understand at that point what is right and what is wrong. I got to tell you, as somebody that has taught sixth grade, as somebody that has coached basketball for years, somebody that coached my kids' t-ball team as well, some baseball, I got to tell you, parents, they're not shy about stepping in and telling a teacher or a coach how they feel. You know, when I taught sixth grade, I taught it at a private school where people were spending thousands of dollars to send their kids. And let's face it, I probably had no business being these kids' teachers. I was an immature 22-year-old fresh out of college. These parents were horrified. They were horrified when they saw me. I looked like I should have been one of the kids. You know, we had a great year together, a great couple of years together. And those are some of the best years of my life. But the first 3 months of that school year, man, those parents were not shy about telling me how much they didn't like me. They told me after each and every day. There was always one or two. You know, Mary Ross, you know who you are. And there was always one or two that were like her, that were so sweet, that would come up to me. They knew I was working my butt off. They knew that I was doing a good job. Give me a hug and sort of reinforce that I was doing okay. Because let's face it, if you're spending thousands of dollars to send your kid to school, you're not going to be shy about telling the teacher where to go and how to go there. And a lot of the parents did. Same thing with coaching sports. You know, parents that played a sport, they think they know it all. Now, they don't want to coach. they don't have the time to coach, whatever it may be. But that doesn't stop them from giving coach their opinions. So if the coach is out there delivering the wrong message to your kids because you know the right way to tackle, you know the right way to prevent head injuries because the city, the state, at a city and state local government level put PSAs out there, somehow delivered the information to your mailbox, to your television, to your radio. There was local seminars at the schools that you went to. Now the parents are armed with the most important thing in this whole equation. It's information. And once everybody's on the same page, and once everybody has access to the same information, those few rogue coaches, they won't get away with it anymore. And then we get the best of our kids. And our kids get to learn how to play football the right way, the best way. And we don't have to remove another tool from the parental tool belt. The kids can play tackle football as long as they tackle correctly. It is Sports Radio WEI. It is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. So tackle football at a young age still on the table, as well as how do you fix the Celtics from a basketball perspective? Come on, basketball coaches. It's time to put your coaching hat on. I say you move Kyrie to off the ball. You allow Gordon Hayward to handle the basketball and run the offense through him. That's how you get the best out of those two guys. What do you guys say at 617-779-7937? It is Sports Radio WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you as we'll make our way together up until midnight tonight. The number to join me here is 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And really interested in diagnosing and fixing what ails the Celtics here. Because, you know, as emotional as I get about this team, I've loved them for my entire life, right? So it didn't make a difference if it was, you know, Purvis Ellison and Sherman Douglas out there or Vin Baker. This has always been my team. But I think that this year has been the most difficult year to watch. It just hasn't been enjoyable on television, hasn't been enjoyable at the Garden. There's something fundamentally wrong with this group, and I think one of those problems that permeates itself through the TV and through the Garden crowd is the fact that this team doesn't like each other. There is a lot of infighting here, and they're not flying on one plane towards the same goal. Now, Danny Ainge was on with Dale and Keefe earlier. We'll hear some of that coming up a little bit later. And Danny sort of intimated some of these things too, you know, and he chalks it up to internal competition between these guys. But Danny also said something else that more or less angered me to a certain extent. He backed Brad Stevens unconditionally, where Brad Stevens doesn't have to worry about his job ever. Now, do I think the Celtics should fire Brad Stevens? No. I think Brad Stevens is a hell of a coach. And I think that Brad probably could use a seasoned NBA assistant coach, probably a former player, next year, especially if the Celtics go out and acquire a secondary star. Right? If they hold on to Kyrie and they get themselves a secondary star, they're going to need somebody that played in the league to go alongside Brad Stevens to help the communication process, because that's where Brad really struggles. That's where you see Brad's a brilliant basketball mind. Nobody can draw up a play quite like Brad. However, and that may be where Doc Rivers has some weaknesses. You know, Doc isn't a guy that you're going to get the best out of every single player with Doc Rivers. It's just not going to happen. But a guy like Doc is somebody that's capable of coaching these veteran superstar players. That's just a fact. That's Doc's strength. That's where Doc really shines. And there's a bunch of other guys around the league that can sort of fit that role for the Celtics. I think they should add to their coaching staff, not subtract. But if you're Danny Ainge, is it in your best interest to continue to reinforce the job stability that Brad Stevens has? Because one of the things that I haven't liked about this team this year has been Brad's complacency. And that is surprising to me. You know, it's one thing to be somewhat complacent when things are going really well for you. But, you know, Brad at some point here, doesn't he have to change things up a bit? Doesn't he have to show a more emotional side to himself? Doesn't he have to get a little desperate? Or is he okay with the losing? Because that's the one thing that I can't wrap my head around watching this team. It seems like everybody is okay with the losing. And everybody is starting to accept the fact that losing is just part of the norm this year. And for a team that had aspirations of going to the NBA Finals, there is going to be zero accountability when it comes to this team's management. Let's think about this for a minute. If it were any other team in Boston, let's look at the Red Sox. Look at the Red Sox under John Farrell. They won 91 games, two consecutive years, made it to the playoffs, and they bowed out in the playoffs. But they won their division. And know what happened to John Farrell? After 2 years of taking a beating on EEI and on 98.5, after 2 years of taking a beating on NBC Sports Boston, he got fired. He got replaced. Yet 91 wins and winning your division in consecutive years, and by the way, it was the first time that happened in the history of the franchise, that will be cause for a celebration. You saw what Indy did in the playoffs. They raised a 1-0 banner, for God's sakes, okay? Like, this is what we are in Boston. And we generally don't accept teams that play that underperform. And this Celtics team is underperforming at a troubling level. Yet here we are, and Wick Grosbeck, Steve Pagliuca, they've come out and they've reinforced the fact that Danny's got nothing to worry about. And Danny's come out and he has reinforced the fact that Brad has nothing to worry about. Why are green teamers so complacent? And why are we so easy to please? That really is something that I've never quite understood about us green teamers. You know, we're all the same. We're all very easily pleased. And we are all we all easily accept what's happening here. And we all make way too many excuses. And that's the one problem we've got with Celtics fans, that I've got with my fellow Celtics fans. I can't be the only one that is screaming at the TV, wishing and hoping that Brad Stevens will wake the hell up one of these days and maybe tighten up his rotations a little bit, maybe get emotional. Maybe some of his emotion will rub off on his players, so God forbid one game they start to win the 50-50 balls, and you start to see some of that defensive energy and some of that passion that we saw from other Brad Stevens teams in recent years. Because this team, let's face it, let's just go back to last night. They should have been down by 30 points. They played just as poorly last night for portions of that game as they did up in Toronto. The only difference was Toronto was hitting their shots, so Toronto blew out the Celtics. Last night, the Celtics, they were allowed to hang around. Ultimately, they made not one but two runs, but it wasn't enough. But the Celtics weren't doing things all that much better to make those runs. You know, this Celtics team, all season long, there's been a heart problem. There's been a hustle problem. There's been an inability to get the 50-50 balls. And at some point, doesn't that have to fall on the coach and the culture that he has created here? Or do we just give the coach a pass once again? So now, just to, you know, make things straight here, make sure we're all on the same page. If you check my Twitter feed and all the reaction that I get when I talk about things like this, most Celtics fans are completely okay giving Kyrie Irving a complete pass, giving Al Horford a complete pass. So they're the veteran leaders of this team. You want to give Gordon Hayward a complete pass because of the injury. You're okay giving Danny Ainge a pass even though he assembled this mismatched mess. And we're going to give Brad Stevens a pass too. So everybody in a leadership role within the Celtics, they get a pass. And everybody wants to blame Terry Flippin' Rozier and Jaylen Brown. Those are the two scapegoats for this horrible Celtics season. That blows my mind. You know, Brad, he could take some ownership there. He could simply bench them, you know, if they're a problem. I don't think Jaylen Brown's a problem, but a lot of Celtics fans do. I think Jaylen Brown deserves more playing time. I think Jaylen Brown has earned the right to start once again. I think Jaylen Brown has earned the right to be on the floor late in games in the fourth quarter over a guy like Marcus Morris. Marcus Morris had a nice run here for a couple of months, and the Celtics needed him. But he has become one of their most inefficient players in recent months. He has, but he's Kyrie Irving's boy, so he's probably not going to be taken away from the starting lineup because everybody is afraid of Kyrie Irving. Everybody's afraid of pissing him off. Everybody is afraid that the next move they make will be the wrong move, and ultimately it's going to push Kyrie out the door. So I got to watch Brad Stevens walk on eggshells. I got to watch Danny Ainge and listen to him on WEI today pussyfoot around all the issues, because nobody on this team is ready to step up, not the players, not the coach, not the president, general manager. There are zero people in leadership roles in the Boston Celtics that are willing to step up and accept any responsibility for this season. They all are very comfortable just kicking the can down the line and saying, tomorrow things will get better. Well, things will not get better if they don't change things here. If they continue down this path, it's the flippin' definition of insanity. They continue to make the same mistakes, wish for something better, then repeat and do it all over again. It makes no sense to me. It shouldn't make sense to you. But again, complacency sets in because we're green teamers and we're just happy to be here. It is Sports Radio, WEI.
T T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.